chapter 2, verse 35. Yata sankhyayate bhuvi tatha vit sutra vipranam ta yeya yuge yuge itesha manavo vamso yata sankhyayate bhuvi Tata vichudra vipranam. Tasta geya yuge yuge. Iti, thus, in the cantos of this Srimad Bhagavatam. Esha, this, Manava, descending from Vaivasvata Manu. Vamsa, a dynasty. Yata, as sankhyayate, it is enumerated, bhuvi, upon the earth, tata, in the same way, vit, of the Vaishyas, sudra, sudras, vipranam, and brahmanas, tata, the situations of each, yaya, are to be understood. Yuge yuge. In each age. Translation, thus I've described the royal dynasty of Manu as it is known on this earth. One can similarly study the history of the Vaishyas, Sudras, and Brahmanas living in the various ages. Prabhupada, just as the dynasty of kings includes the exalted, infinite, virtuous, and wicked monarchs, varieties of human character are found in intellectual, commercial, and laboring orders of society. Text 36, these personalities, who were great souls, are now known only by their names. They exist only in accounts from the past, and only their fame remains on the earth. Purport, although one may consider oneself to be a great, powerful leader, he will ultimately end up as a name in a long list of names. In other words, it is useless to be attached to power and position in the material world. Text 37. Devapi, the brother of Maharaj Santanu, and Maru, the descendant of Ikshvaku, both possess the great physical strength, you know, living even now in the village of Kalapa. At the end of the age of Kali, these two kings, having received instructions directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva, will return to human society and reestablish the eternal religion of man, characterized by the divisions of varnas and ashramas, just as it was before. Wherefore, according to this in the previous verse, the two great kings who will reestablish human culture at the end of Kali Yuga have already descended to the earth, where they are patiently waiting to render their devotional service to Lord Vishnu. The cycle of four ages, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, and Kali, continues perpetually among living beings on this earth, repeating the same general sequence of events. By dear King Parikshit, all these kings I have described, as well as all other human beings, come to this earth and stake their claims. Ultimately, all must give up this world and meet their destruction. Even though a person's body may now have the designation king, in the end, that name will be worm, stool, or ashes. What can a person who injures other living beings for the sake of his body know about his own self-interest, if his activities are simply leading him to hell? Perhaps after death, the body may be buried and eaten by worms, or it may be thrown in the street or forest to be eaten by animals who will pass out its remnants of stool, or be burned and converted into ashes. Therefore, one should not pave his way to hell by using his temporary body to injure the bodies of other living beings. In this verse, the word Bhuta includes non-human life forms, who are also creatures of God. One should give up all envious violence and learn to see God in everything by the process of Krishna consciousness. Translation, thus I've described the royal dynasty of Manu as is known on this earth. One can similarly study the history of the Vaishya Sudras and Brahmanas in various ages. These personalities who were great souls are now known only by their names. They exist only in accounts from the past, and only their fame remains on the earth. Devapi, the brother of Maharaj Santanu, and Maru, the descendant of Ikshvaku, who both possess great mystic power, are now living, even now, in the village of Kalapa. At the end of the age of Kali, these two kings, having received instructions directly from the Supreme Personality of God at Vasudeva, will return to human society and reestablish the eternal religion of man, characterized by the divisions of Varna and Ashrama, just as it was before. The cycle of four ages, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, Kali, continues perpetually among living beings on this earth, repeating the same general sequence of events. My dear King Parikshit, all these kings I have described, as well as all of the human beings, come to this earth and stake their claims, but ultimately they all must give up this world and meet their destruction. Even though a person's body may now have the designation king, in the end its names will be worms, stool, and ashes. What can a person who injures other living beings for the sake of his body know about his own self-interest, since his activities are simply leading him to hell? So here's described the conclusion of the Manus, starting in the third canto. This was described, and up to Krishna, these dynasties. That means in 28th cycle of Vaivasvata Manvantara, when Krishna appears, the dynasties were traced out. Not completely, of course, but in general. In the 12th canto, we got after the disappearance of Krishna, how the dynasty continued and dwindled away. So the Manus and their lineages are one of the 10 subjects of Puranas. They describe these lineages. And the Manus are, the original Manu is Svayambhuva Manu, who comes out of Brahma. And they are powerful living entities to rule over the earth and establish dharma for the human beings. So because this is an important element in human society, order and dharma, etc., these manus are described. And it works according to birthright. In other words, the king has a son, the son becomes the king, that king has a son, and his son becomes the king. So this is how the dynasties rule. It is not that just another person suddenly has a war and conquers everybody, he becomes the king, and then he establishes a dynasty. These are continuous lines of authority. The Manu, and then his sons. So, of course, there are 14 Manus appearing in one day of Brahma. And they're all described in various places in the Bhagavatam. So these are the persons who are authorized to establish the Varnas and the Ashramas, Dharma, Karma Yoga, etc. These are the empowered persons. It's also a post, just like Indra is a post. And it describes in Canto 8 how, in the first cycle of time, Indra is this person is Indra, this person is Manu, this person are these are the sons of Manu, these are the seven sages, etc. So there's specific posts given during the reign of Manu. And then another Manu comes along, new Manu comes along, and then there's a new Indra, there's a new series of Devatas, there's a new series of seven sages, like this. So different persons take these roles every time. So 14 times in the day of Brahma, we find that there's a Manu post taken up by some particular Jiva, and then he rules for 71 Yuga cycles, or at least his descendants rule over the planet Earth and establish Dharma. So this is an arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And as it is said here, the Yuga cycles keep rotating. And as they get towards Kali, then it's pretty bad. So therefore, the sages have to somehow help the Kshatriyas restore the Dharma again. And then we have Satya Yuga starting again. So this happens over and over again throughout the dynasties of these various Manus. And, of course, Dharma is the one factor to keep human civilization at a certain level. So this we know, of course, is one important factor in human civilization, but it is also not the ultimate factor, because the ultimate factor is bhakti. So we may have dharma, but higher than that is the process of bhakti. So who establishes the bhakti during all this time? And we have the seven sages and the manus and the devatas doing everything like this. So who will establish the principles of bhakti? So, of course, the avatars come. And particularly when someone like Krishna comes, of course, they teach specific things like Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita. We also have the Yuga avatars. So the Yuga avatars, and they give a particular method of bhakti for a particular age. So in Satya Yuga, it is meditation on the Supreme Lord Vishnu. In Treta Yuga, it is a sacrifice to worship Vishnu. And in Dwapara Yuga, it is deity worship, or Acharya. And in Kali Yuga, it is kirtan. So it's all worshipping the Supreme Lord. So it's a type of bhakti for all these different ages. So this is also there. Bhakti is also there in all the different ages during the lines of Manu, established by the Yuga avatar. So these are ways in which the Supreme Lord, though he is ever existing in the spiritual world, penetrates into the material world and helps the jivas. We cannot say that the Lord is indifferent to the suffering of the jivas. At the same time, we know that as Kali Yuga progresses, then the descendants of Manu disappear, etc., and then we get a lot of problems for so many years in the material world. And then finally again, the Manu's descendants appear and they establish Dharma again. So there is periods in the material world when it looks as if the Lord's abandoned everybody. He's not there anymore. Certainly the Manus aren't there, so therefore Dharma declines. And we see this in the first canto when Parikshit is ruling. He's one of the last great kings. Then he sees that what the future will be, where Kali personified attacks the bull, and there's only one quarter Dharma left, and that also begins to dwindle away. He's represented by breaking the three legs of the bull. So that's one thing. Dharma gets destroyed. So that's suffering for people who are dharmic, because a dharma flourishes. due to all sorts of sinful activities such as meat eating, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, etc. And then the other problem is that the earth does not give things properly. The earth becomes very disturbed. So that is represented by the cow. So the Maharaj Parikshit saw first the cow and the bull discussing together. They were talking about dharma and adharma and things like that. And then he saw the king, the Sudra king, beating the legs of the bull. And the cow was crying. So this means the earth cries. When adharma is prominent and dharma is less, then the earth begins to suffer. So the suffering of the earth is reflected in non-production. The earth will not yield what it's supposed to give in terms of wealth, that is, minerals, and jewels, and water, and food, etc. It will withhold whatever it's supposed to give from the population. So, there is a relationship between sinful activities and suffering on earth. The more sinful activities, the more suffering. So in Kali Yuga, we know, Dharma gradually declines, Adharma increases. So therefore, the suffering in Kali Yuga will gradually increase and increase and increase. So we hear here, there's a description of Kali Yuga as it progresses. What does the earth do? It doesn't give anything. And therefore, it's described that the people live under the earth The sky does not have any, there's no rain. The sky, there's no sunlight. It's covered with clouds. And it thunders, but there's no rain. And the people live under the earth, and they're all very small and undernourished. They're living in places, darkness under the earth someplace. So that means no food, no light, no water, none of these things. So as Kali Yuga progresses, the earth stops giving. Why? Because it's related to the sinful activities. Of course, we can say that Kali, we got the cycles of Satya Treta Parva Kali. And this means more and more sinful activities increase. And then consequently, earth gives less. Consequently, more and more suffering. So as Dharma decreases through the ages until the end of Kali Yuga, you know, more and more suffering as ages go by. So it's not that the Lord is creating the suffering. It is the activities of the jivas, the human beings, that create the suffering for everything. Due to the rise of the tamas, the strength of tamagun in the human beings. But when it reaches intolerable limit, then we get the appearance of Kalki, who kills all the sinful people. And those who are left, those become purified and inspired by the Supreme Lord. And then Satya Yuga begins again. And so the Lord does not abandon the jivas of the material world. At the end of Kali Yuga, again the Lord appears as avatar. And then he reestablishes the Satya Yuga. So this is how the Lord protects the jivas. So though it may appear that sometimes the Lord abandons the jivas in the material world, this is simply evidence that the jivas have a responsibility. And if they don't act properly, so then they have to suffer in the material world. So that is made evident as Kali Yuga progresses. So it's not that the Lord has abandoned the jivas, but the Lord is pointing out that if you're not responsible for your activities, and you do all violent activities, sinful activities, then you must suffer. So we cannot trace out a direct line between Dharma and morality and matter. How do they interact? We can't see that. And of course, science would reject that, because matter is matter, and that's it. But we know from Bhagavatam that there is a relationship. There is a relationship between Dharma of the human beings, or Adharma of the human beings, and matter. The two interact somehow or other. And our dharma is related to the tamagun aspect of matter, and dharma is related to the sattvic aspect of matter. So when we have people who are dharmic, then this it somehow does something to matter to keep it in a sattvic state. And when we have tamasic people, then matter itself becomes tamasic. That means destructive or destroyed, not productive, etc. That is built into the material world, these aspects of influence. We cannot escape responsibility for our actions in the material world. In other words, karma is always there. If we look at the creation, the very creation from Brahma downwards, prerequisites or eternal matter is there in terms of prakriti, which is the matter, the substance, upadan. But besides that, there's another type of maya existing, that is a subtle maya, that is time and karma. These things exist also eternally as subtle aspects of maya. And when we produce the material world, these factors don't disappear. I mean, time is another factor, kala, karma. These things are very, very subtle. We don't understand what they are, we can't see them. But when prakriti manifests as universes, these things are always there. So time is there. We see here how the cycles keep going on and people keep dying and whatever they've accomplished in their lifetimes turn to nothing, and then simply the bodies turn into ashes, etc. So all that is left of a person is their name, ultimately. But this is the influence of time. Along with that, we have karma. The human beings must get the results of their activity in terms of karma all the time. So they do sinful activities, they must suffer for that. So it is inescapable. It is always there in the material world, and when the universe is created, it is applied to the human beings very, very strictly. So, just to show this, we have all of these cycles of time going on throughout the day of Brahma, in which people enjoy or suffer in the material world. But to help the jivas, then the Lord comes as avatar. The Lord has manus here and devatas to fight against the demons, etc. So there are precautions taken by the Lord to maintain hope for the jivas in the material world, in spite of the fact that generally they had heavily influenced by tamagun. One of these subject matters of the Bhagavatam were these manus, etc., and periodically changing and supporting dharma throughout the material world. But, as I said, the ultimate conclusion of Bhagavatam is not simply dharma, but bhakti. That's the highest dharma of all. So how do the two things relate? Dharma is, as we see in Bhagavad Gita, the whole process of dharma is ultimately to emphasize sattva-gun. Restrict the people in the lower modes until they can get up to sattva-gun. And Krishna says, of the three gunas, I prefer sattva-gun. This is the best use of a bad bargain in the material world for the human beings. At least try to get them up to sattva-gun that much, so that they can live comfortably in that mode, which is what satyuga is, basically. It is very sattvic. The Lord prefers that. Because as I said, gradually the nature of matter is to pull things downwards into tamagun. So then we get decay going towards Kali Yuga. The kings, therefore, try to maintain that sattva in the material world. Now, of course, all people aren't sattvic, but the sudras are there, the vaishyas, the kshatriyas. They are regulated to bring them up to that sattvic level. Tendencies, rajasic, tamasic tendencies are limited. So gradually they become purified and they can go up to sattva-guna eventually. So that's what the kings do. So sattva is preferable. And we know that bhakti, of course, is beyond the gunas, but sattvic habits are favorable to bhakti also. We could say that dharma is a prerequisite to bhakti in one sense. It's favorable to bhakti. However, even without dharma, bhakti can survive. So in Kali Yuga, dharma gets destroyed. Still bhakti can go on. Of course, it's not so favorable because the situation is bad. If everything's tamasic around you, what can you do? But you can do bhakti still. It is still possible. So this is the outstanding nature of bhakti. Whether dharma is there or not, one can perform it. Yes, it is preferable we have dharma around. This is easier to do bhakti when everybody's peaceful and everybody's sattvic. But even if it's not there, devotee can go on with his activities and get proper results. So bhakti is independent of those processes, other processes. In Kali Yuga, this is what happens. Other yugas, of course, dharma is intact, so therefore it's favorable for bhakti. Kali Yuga, dharma is not intact anymore. Still, bhakti can go on. In this way, bhakti is actually an independent process of the either karma yoga, jnana yoga, or stanga yoga. In any case, it can be done, though other elements may be favorable for it. If one is in another yuga, And of course Dharma is there, and he also does bhakti fine. But even then, bhakti is favorable to a certain extent, but also it can become unfavorable. Because if one becomes attached to that dharma, then one's bhakti becomes mixed, and we get karma misra bhakti as a result. So that also is not considered proper. So even if one is doing nishkama karma yoga and is attached to that, and one does bhakti, still, that is not considered the best type of bhakti. So even if we do have dharma in the other ages, ultimately, the person has to become completely detached from everything and become completely attached to the Lord only. So that is the process of bhakti, superiority to all the other things. So for the general population, yes, establish the system by which they can gradually become sattvic, etc. But for the devotees, on the other hand, they are beyond all these systems. So this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. Living in Kalapa in the Himalayas somewhere, it looks like, some village. But they're not manifest by the will of the Lord. So when it ends, when Kali Yuga ends and Kalki comes, kills all the miscreants, then they appear again and they establish Satya Yuga, next Satya Yuga. So that's 400,000 years, more than that. 27,000 years or so, like that. Long time. It's just by their mystic power they're alive somewhere. Of course, Vedavyasa is also alive somewhere in the Himalayas, and who is it? Aswatthama is alive somewhere out there. So, some power they have. Of course, we should understand that these Manus and their descendants are quite powerful. You see, they live a long period of time. Swayambhuva Manu reigns for so long, and Uttanapada lived for so long, Dhruva lived for so long, thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And sometimes Priyavrata lived for a huge amount of time. So the Manus and their descendants are quite powerful personalities. They don't just live 100 years, it's a long period of time. Well, gradually. Like Parikshit, for instance, he kept it out of his kingdom, but it was beginning to appear, and he managed to say, okay, where there is greed and they hoard money, there you can stay there in those places. So there was no greed in his kingdom, apparently, so couldn't be there. But after that, gradually, the kings got a little weaker and weaker and weaker, and then crept in from places. Well, they live more than Satya Yuga. They live huge amounts of time, but not only that, they are empowered by the Lord, the Manus and their descendants. Are empowered by the Lord, so the Manu basically, he reigns over 71 yuga cycles, you know, and his descendants, so they're given great powers, so their bodies are very special material, but nevertheless very, very long lasting special. Well, yeah, people who are Dharma suffer, enjoy also. In fact, they've given whole worlds to enjoy. All the lower planets are full of nice enjoyment. They're called Bilasvarga, which means Svarga, heavenly planets under the earth. Bilasvarga. Bila means a hole, hole on the ground. So in these holes in the ground, under the Bhumandala, we have all these lower planetary systems. And they're full of enjoyment. For people who are at Dharmic, they go down there and they enjoy like anything. So the Lord gives people different types of enjoyment. But of course, they have to suffer also. Yeah? So everybody suffers. They get some sort of enjoyment and may not think they're suffering, but nevertheless they're suffering because of their lower condition, no sunlight, etc. So people on earth also, sinful people may seem to be enjoying. Yes, they're enjoying in one sense. Superficially, they got money, whatever, and they can buy things with money. But are they happy? No, not really. They also suffer like everybody else. And you'll see that in the lives of famous people. They got all the money in the world. They have some worry, some problem, some suffering of whatever. You know, they're not happy. So, yes, they can have some aspect of good karma, even though they're but they have other aspects which are bad as well. And of course, we can't trace out what their next life is also. So usually people are a mixture of good and bad. And sometimes they're getting the good results, sometimes they're getting the bad results. So we don't always see those results together. Could be either. So why do they call it the Ganga then? Oh, I see. And now where is the actual place? Is that located? They don't have a place anywhere? Like they have the place where they spoke the Namisaranya is there. So they have a place somewhere in India where they... So where is it? But it's on the Ganga or the Jamuna? I don't know. I'll check the text and see. Jiva Goswami may have an explanation for that. Why he may claim that it's on the Jamuna, not the Ganga. And why would it say Ganga then? The text says Ganga, no? Yeah. Sometimes words are, this is strange because, like the word Devaki can also mean Yasoda. This is strange. Devaki was another name of Yasoda, so when they say Devaki Sutta, it means Yasoda also, so not Jadar. It means Krishna, who was Yasoda's son, not Devaki's son, the wife of Vasudeva. So sometimes words are also ambiguous, even their meaning. Obviously, it's that has a particular meaning, but it may have an extended meaning also. Yeah.